Fresh, we have a question that we actually need to answer for our audience. We can't do it, though, because I haven't opened the show yet. Twist! Welcome to the Resties. We're the best of the rest. Talk about the rest of the best. My name is Christopher Thomas Plant, and this is...
My name is Russ Frushtick.
And we are here to talk to you today about the history of Metroid. You thought I was going to start the cold open up top, but I didn't. Instead, I threw exactly where I wanted to go, like an ace pitcher, right down the middle, a little bit of a curve to it. We're going to talk about the history of Metroid, and then we're going to talk about, well, not talk about, we're going to set the gambling lines on some big Switch 2 announcements that we...
This patron, you thought this episode was sponsored by our patrons, but in fact, it's sponsored by FanDuel.
And DraftKings, baby, where you can Mother 4.
Things are pretty dire for the old besties if you start hearing FanDuel ads.
Are they? I think if FanDuel ads are coming, that's when you know the besties.
That's probably, yeah.
We're sitting on some gold thrones. That sounds great.
That's true.
So that, we're going to get to all that stuff, but we came upon a problem in doing an episode devoted to Metroid, and that is, what is a search action game, or what is a Metroidvania? Something that we hear from listeners quite often is, hey besties, hey resties, you're our bestie resties, sometimes you say words we don't know. And you act like they're just normal. And there is, in fact, nothing normal about a word like Metroidvania. So, before we get started, I was hoping you could explain what the hell Metroidvania is.
Sure, absolutely. I think thing one about a Metroidvania, very important, big old map. One big map. Not individual levels. One giant map. I feel like almost every, if not every, Metroidvania has that.
I would say the map is the game.
I mean, a lot of things are the game, but certainly the map is a big part of it. Like having a map that you can backtrack and find items in areas that you were previously in but couldn't access before.
Sure.
Very, very important for the genre.
Right. What else? Was that it?
I mean, the item thing that I mentioned.
The gear gating.
The video game term is called gear gating.
Yeah.
Basically, what that means is you need a certain piece of gear to access this gate, if you will, if you wanted to be consistent with the term. So there's a big pit. Your normal jump can't make it over the pit. You need the high jump boots to get over the pit. That's a gear gate. Basically, every Metroidvania has those.
Yeah.
For the most part. Not all of them, but for the most part, they have them.
This is not an original thought. Metroid did a lot of everything you're describing. Castlevania really came late to the party, still gets a naming credit. Why?
Not just a naming credit. It's right there at the front there. Oh, no, I guess it's not.
How words work. Do you think it's just because Symphony of the Night nailed it so hard that the gaming gods were like, yeah, we should probably sneak it in there?
I think that was probably a big chunk of it. Also, Castle Troid sounds stupid.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, I just don't think you'd put Castlevania in all. It should just be a Metroid-like, like a Souls-like, you know?
Oh, yeah. It probably should just be that. You're right.
Yeah,
I would agree with that.
Again, not a wholly original thought. This
man,
we have many times. But while we're discussing this, I do agree. Search action game really makes so much sense. We've joked about it, but what a great game title or genre title that does what so many genre titles do: a racing game, a first person shooter, a puzzle game, a search action game.
Right. I think it is great because you really, if it was just a search game, it would be Waldo, and no one likes Waldo. Perfect. And if it was just an action game, it would be Gears of War 3.
Got it.
In between Waldo and Gears of War 3
is
our old friend Metroid.
that's very true. Well, that's great. I feel like we've laid the base.
I hope so. People mention it in the comments. I guess the Patreon has its own comment system. So mention it in the comments of the Patreon for this episode. Does this answer the question? Because I feel like we've tried to answer this a number of times. I feel like people that subscribe to this might already know what a Metroidvania is, but please tell me if I did it justice or not. I'm sure there are games that break the rules of what I mentioned. For example, Knit, which is a freeware game that I recently talked about either on this first episode that you listened to or the second episode, does not have any gear. So there's technically no gear gating in Knit, but I would still consider it a Metroidvania because it's very much like Metroid. So there are things that break the rules, but you know what? We break the rules here at the Resties, and that's how we do it.
Also, while you're down there in the comments, leave any other words or phrases that you need explained, because, hey, now that we're over here on this Patreon, we're going to be filling out these words. We're going to be writing an entire encyclopedia about all these terms. You're going to walk away from this in 40 years when the show's over. You are going to be an expert. And then your grandchild's going to look at you and say, what did you do with your time? And you're going to say, I listened to a podcast. It's going to be great. Speaking of that podcast, how about we get to it? Not on the other side of a break, because there's no commercials.
Yay. Okay, we're back. Now, Chris Plant, apart from people wanting to know what search action games / Metroidvania meant, I feel like there was a news peg that made us think, hey, it'd be a good idea to dive into the history of the original Metroid. Was there one, or was it just people wanting to know what that was?
Of course there's one.
What is it?
The Nintendo Switch 2 is coming out soon. We hope. We think. Yeah. We believe. We have no, there isn't no, like, game journalism secret information here.
I know. I'm friends with Miyamoto.
You were talking to him?
Yeah, we're buds. We play Xbox together.
Yeah, I'm sure. We don't know anything, but we have reason to believe that two things. The Switch 2 should come out hopefully this year, and Metroid Prime 4 is kind of the expected big game for some time in the launch window.
Which is crazy because, like, literally no one has seen hide nor hair of that game since it was announced and then summarily canceled.
Yeah.
So the idea that we're like, probably, Figure Switch comes out in September, 6 months away from a game that, like, is hotly anticipated but also hasn't been seen, is crazy. It's not out of character, because you look at Mario Wonder, pretty much the same story. Like, no one even knew about that game, and it was like, whoa, that's out in, like, 6 months. And so, crazy, but, yeah, could happen.
Yeah. So,
I guess that's your news peg, is, like, maybe we have a new one coming out.
I know so little about the original Metroid. My experience with it, honestly, as a kid, was not even really seeing it at the video store where we could rent games. That yeah. my best friend, my neighbor, his older brother had a copy of it. And I just remember it seeming so grown up that it was, like, inspired by Alien or Aliens, that it had a gun, you know?
Yeah.
And that anytime we tried to play it, it just felt so obtuse. I mean, just the idea of being able to go in different directions versus a Mario game felt overwhelming to me as a
the idea that
kid.
You could go anywhere on the map, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So how the hell did it come together?
Yeah. So taking a step back, the original Super Mario Brothers came out in September of 1985. I believe that was the Japanese release date. And it was, you probably already know this, a massive, huge, colossal hit. And people were very, very excited about it. And Nintendo obviously was very concerned about following that up. So they had a bunch of people obviously working on a variety of other games. Many of these games were being developed in Nintendo's R&D1 studio, notably helmed by Gunpei Yokoi, who would later create the Game Boy and work on Metroid 2 and stuff like that. But in this studio, they decided, okay, we need another game that's a side-scrolling action game. I guess Mario could be considered that as well. But we want to go in a different route. And what they did was very bizarre. They brought two people that were essentially brand new to Nintendo and said, hey, work on this game for 10 months... and we'll see where it's at.
10 months?
They worked on the game for 10 months.
That feels like an extremely long time in classic video game development.
Yes.
That's
well,
incredible.
It was only two people.
I mean, sure, but I mean, Doom was made faster than that with not a whole lot more.
They also didn't sue. I'll give you some context of why it was so difficult. The two people that were working on it were Makoto Kano, who was basically in charge of like coming up with the idea of, oh, we're going to do like a space game and there's going to be this character running around, whatever. And the other person that was working on it was Hiroji Kiyotake, who basically was an artist and designed the character design for Samus Aran, would also later name Samus Aran, fun story we'll get to in a little bit, and long after that would create and design Wario, who we all know is Mario's evil twin. So it was just them two working on it for 10 months. And they made some progress. One of the key elements is they saw Mario's success. They were like, okay, we need to do something similar to this, but it needs to feel different. So the first thing they looked at was the movement. And they wanted to... there's actually a great interview that's on Nintendo.UK, which was back in 2016. They were kind of celebrating the release of the NES Mini. And Akinori Sao did an interview with a number of the original team members of Metroid. And in that interview, Kiyotake basically said they were trying to, you know, they saw the success of Mario and they're like, okay, why don't we, instead of like the momentum that Mario has, why don't we make the character just like stop at a dead halt? Which didn't seem like much of a feature to me. That always felt a little awkward, and I think would later get changed. But they wanted to make it feel at least a little different from Mario. Yeah. The other thing they noticed, they liked the idea of a character going directly at enemies instead of kind of bouncing on them or kind of avoiding them in some way. And out of that came the famous screw attack. But that was like... you know, you think that would be something more like earlier in the game and stuff like that. But these were the ideas that were running through her head. It was all about mobility and it was all about like, how do we make this game feel different from Mario while still kind of capturing the Mario ethos, if you will.
On one hand, there's just, not even one hand, one whole like mountain. There is this reality of these people made Mario, The Legend of Zelda, and Metroid, which would branch off and form just a colossal chunk of video games up until today, right? And how amazing that is. On the other side, I can't think about, like, well, yes, how amazing that they just thought, like, what feels good? What you're describing is they didn't, it's not like, well, what story about the apocalypse are we going to tell this time? And what's our art style in this capacity? It's like, well, what if it felt different to stop? And also, what if it felt different to charge characters? And what if we built a game around that?
Yeah.
And that, I don't know. I feel like we talked about this kind of recently on a Suicide Squad episode of this couldn't have felt good from the beginning, from like just day one in a white box environment. Does this feel good? And so often, I think of like big games not starting from this kind of same kernel of just tell me, does it feel good? Does it do something new and novel and delightful?
Yeah. Yeah. I can play a Metroidvania today and within 30 seconds know if it's a game that I'm interested in. I don't know if it's going to be a great game, but I can know immediately if it's a game I'm into.
We talked about that recently, I mean, separate from the pod, where there was a couple that I sent over, because I send over every Metroidvania I see to Fresh. And there's one that has killer art. And you look at it, and just immediately you're concerned about how it's going to feel. And you realize just how important that is. I'm still holding out hope for this one. I'm not going to say its name yet, because I want it to be great, and then I want to share it and bring it to the show. But yeah, I agree.
Okay, so you were talking about the length of time that these two people were working on the game.
Yes.
So 10 months pass.
Yes.
Mario is out. It's a huge success. 10 months have gone by. And around this time, a few people get involved with the development of the game and join this duo. One of the people is Yoshio Sakamoto, who is known for basically directing most of the sequels after this game, but didn't join this game until the last 3 months of development. So, you know, the game in total was being developed over the course of basically a year. And Sakamoto didn't join until the very end of it. Also jumping at this point was Satoru Okada, who was the studio head and the R&D1, and Gunpei Yokoi was the head of the division at R&D1. And with that team, they basically brought in as many people as they could to finish this game up. Because, as part of this interview, Sakamoto is asked, so what was the game like when you guys started working on it? 10 months had gone by. Where was the game at? And Sakamoto's like, to be honest, it was hardly done at all. So that's got to feel pretty bad. Sakamoto goes on to say, everywhere they had the same backgrounds and you could only do the same things. The characters were moving, but the rest of the game design was mere bare bones. So that's kind of rough. Kiyotate kind of admits to this and he says, like, look, my skill set was in character design. He said he had Samus moving in like really fine-tuned movements, but all the memory was being eaten up by that animation, the running animation. And so Sakamoto came in and was like, this is not going to work. Like, Samus has like 60 frames of animation for every walk. You need to dial that back. So those difficulties actually tied into a lot of the decisions that ended up being hugely impactful to the Metroid series, one of which is the ball. Now, Chris Plant, you know there's a ball in Metroid.
You can turn into a morph ball.
You can turn into a morph ball.
I know the phrase, and that it's where you look like just like a Marble Madness bouncing around, and it lets you like get into like kind of nooks and crannies.
Right. So based on what I've just said about memory, why do you think they introduced the ball?
No animation. I mean, very minimal animation.
Very minimal animation. They knew because they designed the game with all these crawl spaces. So they designed a crawl animation for Samus, which meant like literally like down on the hands and knees crawling through these narrow gaps. But that was too much memory usage. So their fix for that was just make Samus a ball, which has since become so iconic for the franchise. And it's just like amazing that so many of these things come out of necessity rather than like, oh, let's do something like completely different.
That rules.
Yeah. So, so cool. All this was being designed on the Famicom disk system. Do you know about the disk system?
So the Famicom disk system is the expansion to the NES, right? Kind of Sega CD to the Sega Genesis.
It's funny you said that because it's the expansion to the Famicom, which you would think is the same as the NES, but the Famicom disk system never came to the US.
Right.
So it's basically like Japan had this kind of upgraded version that could latch on to their NES and play games off of practically like a floppy disk.
Yeah, because I think you could like use it like a floppy disk and go, like, if you wanted to do a rental, I think you could copy a game onto it. Was that how it worked?
I don't actually know if you could do that.
I remember interesting things about it. We should do an episode about that whole period because it's kind of silly how much Nintendo experimented in the NES era.
So the reason they even introduced it was because it was so expensive to have these cartridges out, and they weren't able to keep up with demand for manufacturing the cartridges. But these discs were hella cheap, and you could save on the disc, and the discs had more memory space than a normal cartridge did. So all this stuff kind of combined to make for like a more involved game experience for the games that were on the disc, while also being cheaper to manufacture.
Can you look at the image I just sent you?
Oh, boy.
This is Disk-kun. Disk-kun, I love him. Is the official mascot of the Famicom disk system, the Famicom disk system.
He's adorable.
Do you want to try to describe him for the listeners?
Well, I don't want to guess on the color because you'll make fun of me.
Oh, good point. Yes, it's kind of like a school bus yellow.
Okay, he's yellow. He's got giant, like, eyes, kind of cross-eyed. And he's got little stubby hands and feet. He's like a puzzle piece, I guess.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Oh, or a floppy disk.
Yeah, I guess he's a floppy disk, like a personified floppy disk, but I've never seen one in that shape.
Yeah, I'll make sure to share him in the post. He's quite
cute. Very, very cute. Okay, so Kiyotate sort of spent all this time, those 10 months, designing these really, really detailed movements for Samus. And then Sakamoto comes in and the rest of the team come in and they're like, this is not going to cut it. We need to cut these back. And his response, Kiyotate's response was, I was practically in tears, but everyone was helping out. So I didn't mind them being reduced as long as they were able to complete Metroid, which is really nice. And Sakamoto jumps in. He says, I can't criticize Kiyotake-san and the other designer who is Moto, who we haven't discussed. I'll mention that in a second. They had jumped straight from Game & Watch, so they were working on Game & Watch before this, into the world of software development for the Famicom computer disk system. So imagine someone that was making a Game & Watch game, which, if you've never seen one, you might know Mr. Game & Watch from the Smash Brothers games, but Game & Watch games are like the most simple, like Tiger Electronics type games imaginable. So the idea that someone would make one of those, where like a little like clown is going left and right, and that's the entire game, and jump right into making a Metroid game, it's kind of no surprise that it was like a total fiasco for 10 months of them trying to do anything.
Yeah, that's a disaster.
Yeah, a disaster. And yet, Kiyotake-san did accomplish something pretty impactful because he named, apart from actually designing the look of Samus, he named Samus. Do you know the origin of where Samus's name comes from? Samus Aran, specifically?
Samus. I don't. I was trying to. I figured there was like some like guess within it, but I have no clue.
Okay, so according to this interview, Kiyotake thought that the soccer player Pele's real name was Samus Arantes Nascimentos. It wasn't.
Yeah.
Do you know what his real name was?
No.
His real name was Edson Arantes do Nascimentos. Something like that.
Yeah. So basically confusion over, I can't even, they saw Alien, they're like, cool. And they saw Pele and they're like, great. And then they're like, I don't know, let's make an iconic video game that will define an entire genre.
I think he just thought the name was cool. Samus Arantes Nascimentos, which again is not Pele's name.
Yeah.
But I think in his memory, I mean, that's what he thought it was.
Proof that it is and how long lasting it has been.
Yeah. He also, in the interview, was like, yeah, I was totally off. Not even close. Which is noble. Okay, so we have the name. We have the design. They're putting the game together. Thankfully, because of the strengths of the larger team at Nintendo's R&D1, they were able to put together the game. And in that process, in those last 3 months, they came up with the other defining characteristic of Samus, which is Samus's gender.
So how did that come to be? Because I, again, as a layperson here, assumed that this was another tie to Alien and Aliens and Ripley, that they were like, hey, we saw Sigourney Weaver do it. We should have a female lead.
There might have been some. Certainly, there are aspects of this which are very, very inspired by Alien. Obviously, Ridley, who is a recurring enemy, is named after Ridley Scott. The theming is all very like vibey in the Alien vibe. The actual reason that they decided on this is kind of a design decision, which is fascinating, and not an art design decision, a gameplay design decision. So while they were making the game, they're like, okay, we need a reason for people to keep replaying the game after they've beaten it. And they decided we're going to put in multiple endings. But the question was, okay, if you beat it once or you beat it three times, how is the ending going to change? And they were like, well, maybe you like the armor comes off like as you're beating it faster and you see more of the character. And it was part of that where, this is according to Sakamoto, I don't know who the actual person suggested this. Sakamoto just says, and then someone said, wouldn't it be a shocker if Samus turned out to be a woman? And everyone thought that was interesting and wanted to do it. So they just decided it right away.
Okay.
But it's kind of neat that it came out of the idea of like, they just wanted people to keep replaying it and they needed a reason to encourage that.
Yeah. That could have been so much worse.
Yeah.
I was bracing for much worse.
I mean, the game does have like a pretty thirsty bathing suit thing that you could like put codes in and unlock, you know, the classic Justin Bailey code unlocks a bathing suit for Samus. So it's not all necessarily the best, but that's, I mean, it's neat to think that like there was an actual design rationale behind it.
Yeah.
We had talked about Metroidvanias previously, which is obviously a portmanteau. Do you know that Metroidvania is two portmanteaus stuck together to make a third portmanteau?
Wait, Metroidvania. So, I think so. Okay. I know.
So you probably know one of them.
Well, Metroid is Metro Android.
That's right. Did you knew that offhand?
I knew that. Yes, because they saw it as like Metro being like very like fast moving, like travel.
Yeah, also underground. Most of the game was taking place underground, so they thought like, oh, like a subway.
See, I thought it was like fast, but sure. That makes way more sense. And then Android, because I mean, obviously, like.
Yeah, she's not an android, but that's okay.
You would have guessed, you know, had you not made it to the ending and used the cheat code.
Yeah. And then, I mean, you know the other one.
Vania. And then Metroidvania is just Castlevania plus Metroid.
Well, no, but what is Castlevania? A portmanteau.
Oh, a castle Transylvania.
There you go.
Boom. Wow.
Kind of neat. How many portmanteaus do you know that are made of two other portmanteaus?
That's, I mean, now I know one.
You know one, exactly. I pulled some other like little fun, silly facts. Do you happen to know the home planet of the Metroid's name?
No.
The home planet is called SR388, which seems like very random. They pulled the name from a Yamaha motorcycle engine called the SR400.
No way.
But apparently the engine runs at only 388 cc. So that's where they got it from.
Hideo Kojima levels of, let me just reach into my brain and everything that I like, I'm just gonna kind of like collage it together. Yeah. And that's gonna be the video game. Like, so much of what you're saying is just, this was a thing that I enjoyed at the moment.
And also, consider, like, I know you were joking about how long the development was given the time period, but, like, these are all kind of, like, first thought things of, like, should we do this? Yep, let's do it. Okay, next week, it's, like, permanently, and then forever and ever, for the course of all time, that small decision that you made randomly has, like, rippling effects that continue to exist. Which I think is really fucking cool.
Can I tell you one thing that I do know about Metroid?
Yes.
And also let me know if this is true. But I believe Metroid came out like right before Zelda.
Yeah, so I actually have that. So Metroid came out the week before Zelda.
The week before Zelda.
This is in the US.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, Zelda had a battery save.
Ah.
Metroid, no battery save. It had a password save.
How much do you think that impacted everything? Well, two parts. That, you know, the Zelda coming out with, or Metroid coming out, and then Zelda coming out immediately after. And also Zelda having that sweet, sweet gold cartridge.
Oh, yeah. The Metroid team must have been kind of pissed off about that, right?
I would be, because also the box art for the original Metroid kind of looks like every other NES game.
Yeah.
But the Zelda box art looks stunning. It looked like it looked very important. And I say this as somebody who was not a big Metroid person I wasn't much of either of them as a kid, but I remember almost being intimidated by the Zelda of like, whoa, that's an adventure that's simply too big for my brain.
It's worth keeping in mind that like Zelda had already come out in the U.S. had already come out in Japan,
yeah,
and was like already a massive success. And I think anyone that plays Zelda, the first like 30 seconds, you know, oh, this is a game I'm gonna fucking play, like for sure. Metroid, I don't think has that same click to it, especially not the first Metroid. So I get why they like were sinking all of their resources into making sure that Legend of Zelda was like a big, big hit.
It also intentionally conceals its most interesting ideas. You know,
like, Zelda does?
No, Metroid does. Sorry.
Oh yeah.
You know, Zelda, I feel like it is the opposite. It, you know, it throws you into this world and it invites you in, and there's all these cool things to discover. It has secrets, but secrets don't define it.
Yeah.
Where when I think of Metroid, I think of secrets. I think of this big map full of secret pathways. I also think, I mean, obviously, Zelda would go on to have an SNES game or a Super Nintendo game that would be absolutely fantastic. But I think Zelda gets it closer to right on its first go-around than Metroid does.
I definitely agree.
Yeah, I feel like Super Metroid is the game that, like, is the final draft of Metroid, where Zelda, I think, still kind of stands on its own.
If you're really looking for a final draft of this game in particular, the original Metroid, play Metroid Zero Mission. It is definitely the best recreation of this game, modernized in the GBA era with some modern, like, you can hold on to ledges and things like that. But overall, it's like a dynamite entry and really kind of stands out, I think.
Yeah, this is the sort of game that I like Nintendo Online for. You know, it's the type of game that I want to be able to play via emulation to pick at. Yeah. And I wish that there was a means of using a fast forward button on it, or maybe just a YouTube video. It's so interesting, but honestly, I feel like I had more fun listening to you tell me about the game than I ever did playing Metroid.
Okay, I have one last little fun fact for you, and then I kind of have a broader question that maybe the people at home might be able to answer.
Okay.
Last fun fact. If you look at the credits for the original Metroid, a few things are mentioned. One of them is Benking Dining. One of them is called Toryu, and one of them is called Sometime Mako. And those seem like odd things to put in the credits. They're in the special thanks credits. Apparently, they were three restaurants that were right by the building where they were making the game. And they kept ordering from them. And they're like, throw them in. There's like 16 people in the total credits. And three of them are restaurants. Which is great. Okay, that's pretty much it. The one question I have, I guess, for the people at home and maybe for you, Plant, maybe you know. So this interview I mentioned happened in 2016. Throughout the interview, they keep referring to Kiyotate, who's there, Sakamoto, who's there. And whenever they refer to Makoto Kano, who again came up with the scenario for Metroid, is the top build person in the credits for Metroid, they refer to Kano as another designer, never by name. And I'm very curious why that is. I imagine it's a cultural thing or something. Maybe people know. But in this interview by Akinori Sao, which is on nintendo.co.uk, yeah, they intentionally avoid naming Makoto Kano. And I found that very interesting.
That is strange.
Yeah, really odd. Again, I know there's like interesting like cultural things where like if someone leaves a company, like it's almost like they didn't exist anymore in Japan. I don't want to assume, but I found that really interesting. The other one last thing that I found interesting is this interview began with Akinori Sao saying, "Fami konnichiwa, everyone."
Oh my gosh.
Which was just so great. I love that.
I will say, Kano did an interview with Iwata, the late Satoru Iwata, after he was working there. So, yeah, I'm not sure really what that was about.
But that was before this interview happened. And I think it was for Game & Watch or something like that. It was for It was not about Metroid. Just a very odd thing that I wasn't really sure about. Anyway, that's kind of a whirlwind tour of Metroid. I do totally agree with you. Doing a full-on breakdown of the Famicom disk system and maybe the Famicom in general would be really, really fun because it is kind of a bizarre ride. But, man, this game is really cool. I think it is just like it's a franchise and a genre that I've been in love with for basically ever, and I hope more people get to enjoy it.
I love it. Hey, do you want to flip to the other side and go through the betting lines for some Nintendo Switch tips.
Heck yeah.
We are back, and we are going to talk about the Nintendo Switch 2, which could be announced tomorrow, and it could be announced in the summer, and it could be announced in the fall. We have no idea, but we think it's going to be soon, and we think that when it happens, they're going to really push a new Metroid. But we're not certain of any of this. So, what we want to do is create some kind of fake gambling lines. What are the odds that we think any of these things will actually happen? I think we're largely going to focus on specific video game releases. And to kind of set a base, I figure we can start with Metroid Prime 4. And the
I just say, I always get really confused about gambling lines like 2-1 and 3-2 and blah, blah, blah. So I wrote down, we're either going to say definitely, very likely, possible, unlikely, and no fucking way.
Okay. I like that. That's much easier.
So Metroid Prime 4. Once again, we have not seen, all we've seen is a title card for a game that essentially got canceled. So you're saying, and again, are these launch games or are they launch window games?
I think this is like the first year.
Oh, wow. Year. That's a big, let's say the first 3 months, because the first year can be.
Or like the first 6 months. I'm trying to think of, you know, like we had Zelda Breath of the Wild when the Switch launched. And then we got Super Mario Odyssey not so long afterwards.
I think it was like 3 months after.
Yeah, Odyssey. So I'd like whatever span that is, I think that is our kind of window.
Okay, so basically same year, we figure, I think we're all expecting like a September launch for the Switch 2 if it happens.
Yeah.
So figure anything in this year, the likelihood of that stuff happening. And Metroid Prime 4, okay, so I would say, I mean, I've been saying, I think it's very likely that it happens this year.
Yeah. I would be shocked. There's so much, like, there's not always fire where there's smoke, but there's an awful lot of smoke.
The only thing that I could see preventing it from happening is if the Switch 2 is positioned almost like how they position the Xbox Series X, which is like not really almost it's like more powerful, but effectively it runs all the same games.
Yeah,
and that would allow them to not necessarily have that many like exclusive launch games for the thing.
I think there has been some quotes kind of sneaking out from Nintendo, though, of recognizing novelty is what makes Nintendo Nintendo. That you can't just kind of sit on your hands, and that you have to give people a reason to care when buying a console. Which, do I think that means like a massive departure from the Switch? No, but I think, I can't remember if we've talked about this on the show or not. There was a thing when the original Switch came out where they kind of suggested, because the controllers were removable, you could like put a fishing rod on it or like all sorts of like fun little goods.
Oh, yeah.
And that
is... Because the Wii had those like shitty attachments too, right? You could buy like a plastic tennis racket and stuff.
Yeah, and that is a thing that I kind of always have wondered, like what happened there? That seemed like a really interesting idea that just kind of disappeared. The only thing on that, though, is they've gotten kind of cozy with having the Switch Lite, which doesn't have removable controllers. So maybe they just gave up on that entirely. But anyway.
They kind of usually do. There's usually like 16 like weird ideas that are going on in the Nintendo hardware, and in the first year they try to use them all in like 1-2 Switch and a variety of other things.
Yeah,
and then after the first year they're like, we'll just make games, it's fine.
Okay, Metroid Prime 4, very likely that that adds up.
Yeah.
Next up, Mother or Earthbound. Mother is Earthbound's like name in Japan.
Yeah.
I'm going to say any game. It could be a sequel. It could be a re-release of Mother 3. It has to be something that's never set foot in the United States.
Okay. No fucking way.
I don't think so. I'm going to put this as unlikely, veering on possible.
Wow.
Because.
Maybe the existing game. I could see the existing game coming to like fucking Switch online.
The issue there is it would need some changes because some of it is just where culture is at would not age well.
Really?
Yeah.
Yikes.
But it's Earthbound's 30th anniversary, and Nintendo has like said they're going to commemorate this in some way. I just feel like there'll be something. I just can't imagine that there's truly nothing. But I have, 30 years of reason to believe there will be truly nothing. So maybe I should just stick to those odds. But
I think it's nothing is because despite you and the 16 other people that really, really care about Earthbound, I do not think it has broad like draw. And I think they're going to try to lead with the strongest properties they have.
I would agree. But I also think when you are launching something, those are where you serve your most hardcore fans because you're trying to create your base. So
yeah, but fucking Metroid Prime is hardcore fans.
That's true.
Like
that's
we're about to list like 16.
I'm putting it as unlikely because I
would love to see it happen just for your sake, but it seems like a real
reach. I think there are stronger no fucking ways.
Okay. That's
okay. So after that, we've got a new 3D Mario. And by that, we mean something Super Mario Odyssey, Super Mario 64, kind of like the next heir to that
estate. Yeah, not like the 3D Mario, the one with Bowser's inside, whatever, that Bowser
game.
Yeah. I think if Metroid Prime 4 is a very likely, like an 8 out of 10 likelihood, this is a 9 out of 10 likelihood.
Really?
Yeah.
I think
this is the poster Metroid Prime 4 is not the poster child for the launch of this console. They've never used Metroid as a poster child for a launch of a console before. This is it. This is the one that sells the console. And I think almost certainly.
See, normally I would say that the poster child for a console like this at launch would be Mario Kart. Because Mario Kart sells more than anything.
You're right.
What do you do after Mario Kart 8 and Super, the most recent Smash Brothers? I don't know.
Especially since those games will both probably, I'm willing to bet both of those games will run on the Switch 2.
Yeah, they're just so.
So can you convince someone that's been playing Mario Kart 8 for that long, it's time to upgrade if you already have Mario Kart 8? I mean, I guess it depends on how dramatically different Mario Kart 9 is, but I don't know. They're all kind of the same.
Yeah. But it's been a long time since we got a new Mario Kart. Okay. New 3D Mario, very likely. I can agree to that. Newer Super Mario Brothers. So a 2D Mario, basically. This would have been very high on my list before Wonder.
Right.
And now I think it's plummeted all the way down to like, almost no fucking way.
I think we could say no fucking way. Yeah. They're not going to release two new 2D Mario platformers, especially if we're thinking we're that confident in the new 3D Mario coming out. No way.
Okay, so here's one that you pitched, and you said Zelda Breath of the Wild plus Tears of the Kingdom. Do you mean like a double whammy of a video game, kind of a mega game? Or
you think these
would be two separate releases, but they run really well and they look nice?
Yeah, so that's really the question, is are they going to do like Switch 2 versions of classic games that are like, this can run at 60 FPS or this can run at 4K or whatever it is. I don't think they're going to like create a new game that blends the two together. I kind of think they really want to show off what the hardware can do, and the best way to do that is to show existing games how they can be enhanced with this hardware. So I would put this at a possible, or maybe even a likely.
So Nintendo is not one to follow industry norms.
Sure.
So there is a chance that they could say, hey, you know what? You can buy it again. Sure, it's backwards compatible, but you can spend money and get a like slightly prettier version of it. I guess that wouldn't even be that unusual compared to, Last of Us. Sony's done this.
I mean, a lot of studios these days, you pay $10 extra for the PS5 version. Or whatever.
Yes, well, I guess that's what I'm wondering is, would this be a upgrade that you pay for if you already own it?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah. They said that they don't plan on doing, you know, DLC for Tears of the Kingdom, but some sort of the Bowser, the giant Bowser game that
Yep. Yeah, the Mario plus Bowser game, yeah.
Yes. I wonder if they could do something like that. Like, what would one final go of the Zelda style be if it was a smaller thing?
I don't see that happening. I mean, the only possibility for that would be like something akin to that Crypt of the Necrodancer spinoff that Zelda had, where they give it to like an indie to do something really dope. I'd love to see that. But I think if it's a 3D Zelda game, we won't see that, like a fully brand new one. We won't see that until
you're right. Tears
the
of the Kingdom is like still selling way too well.
Yeah.
We'll be fine.
But I genuinely could see them enhancing Tears of the Kingdom in some way using the new hardware.
I think if they're going to do that, I think we will see it right away.
Yeah.
And I'm just saying it wouldn't be like other Nintendo things where, you know, like when they've done these HD remakes, it feels like they've had them done for like 5 years and they're like, yeah, sure, we'll release one in 3 months.
Yeah.
This feels like they either will do it quickly or they won't do it at all. Maybe I'll be completely wrong there, but it feels like it would be strange for them to slow drip $10 upgrades to all these games. Okay, possible. A new Paper Mario.
Okay, so just as a refresher for people, Paper Mario Thousand Year Door is coming out to Switch this year. I'm very excited about it. I guess what's being presented here is a completely different one, which would be brand new. And it's worth considering that, like, kind of no Paper Marios have been fun for like 20 years. Really, I think maybe since Thousand Year Door, they've all been like varying degrees of not the best, usually because they're just trying to like constantly avoid making them like those old Paper Mario games that everyone seems to love. I think I have hopes that this will happen in this generation where they'll make a new Paper Mario game in the gameplay style of the old Paper Mario games and not like introduce a weird fucking ring of cards or whatever the hell the last game was. But I don't think it's going to happen in the first 3 months. So I would say no fucking chance given the proximity to the re-release of Thousand Year Door.
Okay, here is one from me. Kirby's Dream Course sequel or some sort of full game Kirby spinoff. So by that, I mean, it's not a traditional Kirby game, but it's also not like the Kirby's Fun Buffet or whatever that came out on the Switch for free and or cheap. This is one of the Kirby's Wild Ride. You know, Kirby goes and does something cool and interesting that is not a traditional Kirby game.
Yeah. Tilt and Tumble.
Sure, yeah. This is possible.
I really, for what it's worth, you were the one that introduced me to Kirby's Dream Course, which I hadn't played ever. And I really liked the idea. I mean, it was janky as fuck. Like, it's very awkward to play in modern day. But conceptually, it's, you know, Kirby golf, like Kirby mini golf. And I really dug that. So I'd love to see it. I could see something Kirby related happening.
Kirby's become kind of a quiet front runner of Nintendo. We see him a lot more than we'd expect to. And I think because of that, he will make an appearance of some sort in this kind of launch window. The question is, what type of appearance will that be?
Yeah, I do think they already have a team working on the sequel for Forgotten Realms, that 3D one game that came out because it was very successful and everyone loved it. But I don't think that game is going to come out in the first 3 months.
After this, building off the golf vibe. Okay, are you with me? Mario Golf Advanced.
A good Mario Golf
sequel
game
to the GBA Mario Golf style.
Yeah, a good Mario Golf game. This is the same problem that Paper Mario has, which is they haven't been able to make a fun one because every time they try some bonkers ass shit and forget the reasons why everyone loves those old Mario Golf games. So no, I don't think this is very likely at all. I would say
how long unlikely. Has it been since we saw a recent Mario Golf?
A year ago. It was like a year and a half, maybe.
Was it that recent?
Switch. I'm gonna look it up. So the Mario Golf Super Rush came out on June 25th, 2021. So I guess it's what is that, two years?
So very recently. So this is not happening.
Not happening.
Okay. I'm putting it under no fucking way. Okay. Next up, Pokemon Golden. This is a version of the current Pokemon game, but kind of spruced up like Persona.
What do you mean by kind of spruced up? I think it's going to need a little more than kind of.
It's going to run. It's going to look a lot better, and it's going to have like more characters and more, you know, gyms and all that stuff.
Yeah, I would definitely, at least possible. I would at least say possible, because maybe the increased hardware will like address some of the biggest issues that everyone had, which is like, hey, this game doesn't really run.
Yeah.
And arguably these like updates are not a huge lift, but it's also, they haven't, I guess they've done that. Yeah. Like Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon. That's more or less what you're talking about, right? Is like a enhanced version of a game.
Yeah.
A Pokemon game. Yeah. I'm going to, in the first 3 months, I don't think it's going to be in the first 3 months. I think it'll be the following year, but I do think it's going to happen.
That seems about right. I feel like with this, the reason that I do think it'll need to be more than just an HD upgrade is if it's just like, hey, we sold you that game and now it runs well, that's a bad look. That's a real, it probably should have come out on this anyway. And I think, yes, making something that's a little bit more finessed helps ease that sting.
Yeah.
Okay, two more, and then we can put a bow on this. Will we see more Golden Sun now that Nintendo's kind of getting Golden Sun out in front of people?
What do you mean by getting Golden Sun out in front of people?
Like, you can play Golden Sun on Nintendo Online now.
Oh, well, you can play a lot of things on Nintendo Online.
Yeah, but like
Stinger. Are they bringing Stinger back?
January 16th. Yeah, I mean, the dream would be that, what is it? Sin and Punishment is getting a new game. That's my fantasy. That's not going to happen. Sure. Then again, you know what? I said Sin and Punishment from the Nintendo 64. Never going to get a new game. Nobody's even heard of Sin and Punishment. And then the Wii got a new one. So
that's true.
It could happen. I put it no fucking way.
Yeah, I think it's a no fucking way. The last Golden Sun game came out 21 years ago in North America. That was Golden Sun: The Lost Age. Great game. Those are great games. I'm pretty sure I beat both of them, it's very rare for that genre for me to beat anything.
I'm realizing the playbook right now with Nintendo Online is so similar to what they did with the Virtual Console at the end of the Wii life cycle, which when the Wii was like running out of steam, they just started putting all the classics.
Oh yeah, the gems in there.
Yeah, there was so much great stuff, and they're like, "This will keep you loading up the shop every week," and that does feel like, yes, I should not mistake them pandering to the end of the Switch life cycle for they suddenly care deeply about Golden Sun.
Yeah.
Last one, Donkey Kong Country.
Okay.
This is a toughie for me. I have no clue what's up here.
So the reason that I think it's very unlikely is because who develops Donkey Kong Country?
It's those people in Texas. Is that right?
Retro.
There we go.
And they're also known for developing another game, and it's called Metroid Prime 4. So it's probably unlikely, unless, which is very possible, that Nintendo could go out and work with another studio. You know, Nintendo hired a great studio in Spain to make the make Dread and that remake of Metroid 2. So it's possible, but I don't think it'll happen in the first 3 months.
Yeah, there
I would
there
I
hasn't
would
been a new Donkey Kong game in a long time. I will say that Donkey Kong Country Returns 2010. Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze, really 2014. There's a re-release in 2018. So we are almost a decade out from a new Donkey Kong Country.
We are definitely due for one, and I definitely think it's going to come back, but I don't necessarily think it'll happen in the first 3 months. But that'd be fucking wicked. Those games are so good.
Yeah, that would be really nice.
I'm going to put it at unlikely.
Okay, I think that's a good place to put it. We did it. These feel like pretty sound odds in terms of our expectations. It sound like we're really expecting a new Metroid, a new 3D Mario. And we wouldn't be surprised if maybe Kirby showed up in some way. Maybe some Pokemon showed up in some way. And then we would be absolutely stunned if Golden Sun was just appeared on our doorstep. And sometime in the next, 9 months.
Wicked.
You want to wrap things up? You got any honorable mentions for us?
I don't think so. We're kind of buried in games that we're not allowed to talk about at the moment.
Oh my gosh.
It's taking up a lot of my time.
It is so great. There are so many good games. I looked at my Steam list just earlier today and was just kind of overwhelmed by how much great stuff is. And then I ended up playing something that wasn't even on my computer. Just so much good stuff. I will say, in terms of things that I am looking forward to whenever I do dig myself out of video game world, I really want to watch that Masters of the Air.
I don't know what that is.
Masters of the Air is the kind of like sidequel to Brothers, the World War II.
Band of Brothers?
Band of Brothers, thank you. And it's about pilots. It's about, people up in the air. And it has Austin Butler in it. He's Elvis. And talk about casting somebody who just looks like they were just airdropped from the time period.
Yeah.
And it looks really good. It's on Apple TV Plus, which means they just threw a ton of money at it.
Yeah.
And it looks like it. The visuals look killer. Yeah, I have not watched this. I am wanting to watch it. It does feature Sawyer Spielberg, one of Steven Spielberg's sons, who is now an actor, which I had no idea about until this movie.
Cool.
But
that kid probably went to E3.
You know what? You're probably right. He probably did.
Spielberg always went to E3 with all his kids. It was very funny.
Especially Max Spielberg, because Max is the game designer, right?
I think so.
I think that's right. Cool. We did it. We did another episode of The Resties. And thank you. Hey, you listening to the show right now? Truly, thank you. We quite literally at this point would not be doing the show without you. And it means the world to have your support and to have a listener-supported show is it's a real gift. And we are grateful for it.
Is it even support? It's not even listener supported. It's like listener wouldn't exist without listener.
Yes, it is.
I wish there was another layer above listener supported.
We'll have to use a thesaurus.
Yeah,
I think that's what we need. If people want to give us some ideas of how we can describe our situation, that would be great. We'd appreciate it. Otherwise, that's it. We did another episode of The Resties. My name is Christopher Thomas Plant.
My name is Russ Frushtick.
And this is another episode of The Resties, where the rest of the best continue to discuss the best of the rest.
Resties.